A new report by a business-backed think tank has found there's little robust evidence for sugar taxes and their ability to reduce obesity. Last night, the New Zealand Initiative launched its report, Health of the State. It argues for personal freedom and questions the use of food taxes as a mechanism for improving public health. Well, let's speak to Oliver Hartwich. He's the Executive Director of the New Zealand Initiative. Good morning.
Good morning.
You say in this report, you pose the question, would you rather be fat and happy or skinny and miserable? Is that a rather clever way of saying that this is a matter of personal choice, obesity?
Well, yes, we take liberty, personal liberty and consumer sovereignty as our starting points. We think consumers should generally be free to make their own decisions how to live their own lives. If you want to interfere with their freedom, you should have good arguments. And we are saying that we haven't really seen any good evidence to show that these taxes that are currently being discussed and introduced in some parts of the world actually work. Because if you look at the sugar tax in the UK, for example, that is a tax that claims to reduce obesity. But then when you look into the details, you can see that it only applies to some fizzy drinks, not to milk-based products, not to fruit juices, for example. And we simply haven't seen that there is this causal link between one tax and reduce obesity.
You're saying, though, that obesity is a matter of personal choice?
We are saying that we should have a proper debate about sugar, about nutrition, that we should have a debate that starts with families, that continues in schools, that is a public debate, and that consumers have to make informed choices.
Yeah, okay, but I'll quote your own report to you. You say, if you are poor, would you rather live a long life with an expected low level of income and wealth, or live a happier, albeit shorter life, eating what you want? So you are assuming that this is just a matter of personal choice.
We are saying that personal choice is an important element in this debate, and sometimes consumers will make choices that will not please all nutritionists. I mean, you probably know the situation yourself. You're coming home after a day of work and you're thinking, what am I going to do? Am I going to go on the exercise bike now, or am I opening a can of Coke or a can of beer? Because it makes you happy and it's just what you need at the moment. So you have to sometimes make choices that will not make everybody happy.
Let's look at real choice, though. If a giant food company has the economies of scale to fill my belly with $5 worth of junk, and I haven't got the $15 needed for a healthy salad, is that a real choice?
I'm not quite sure whether that's the right alternative, as the way you phrase it, because you're always having a simpler choice and a cheaper choice. You could just drink water, for example. You don't have to resort to fizzy drinks. We have to have a debate where a fizzy drink, a sugary drink, is acceptable as a treat now and then. But you have to know, of course, the side effects that come with your nutritional choices.
Yes, but don't you accept that junk food is often produced very cheaply and sold very cheaply, and a lot of poor people don't have the money to eat healthy foods?
Okay, but do you think that you're really improving their education results then if you're actually putting an extra tax on that? Because it might just mean that the people that you're just talking about are actually paying even more for their food, so they're cutting back on some other choices because they still want to get the treat.
Yeah, but it's broader than that, though, isn't it, Oliver? You're talking about taxes and also marketing campaigns and other government intervention which go around this in the similar way that we've done with alcohol and tobacco. And you're saying, no, get out of our lives.
We are saying that we should have a proper debate about it, where we're saying really we accept that there is a concern about our sugar consumption, we accept that there is concern about diabetes, about obesity, all of that we completely accept. Where we simply do not see the evidence in all of the literature is really that the taxes that are currently being discussed actually have the desired effect of tackling these problems.
Okay, well, if taxes don't work for junk food or for sugar, why have they been effective in reducing smoking?
They are effective in reducing smoking because you're talking about a completely different scale of the taxation. When you're talking about taxes on tobacco, for example, you're seeing a tax that is now 150% of the price.
So taxes would work on food if they were a lot higher. You're calling for higher taxes.
But nobody currently in the debate, not even the proponents of a sugar tax, call for taxes of a similar amount on sugary drinks, for example, that we're currently seeing on tobacco products. They should be honest enough then to say, well, if we really want to reduce sugar by the same amount that we have reduced tobacco in the past, we should be talking about taxes that are really more than just a few cents on a litre of Coke.
Okay. In the interest of transparency, because you have criticised in this report smoking reduction programs, food taxes and restrictions on alcohol marketing, does your New Zealand initiative include in its paying members any tobacco companies?
Yes, and we also have companies from the food and beverages industry. We also have companies that are actually disagreeing with our position. We are not an echo chamber. We are an organisation where members basically commit to supporting the organisation as a research organisation, but then don't have an influence on our individual research reports.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us. We do appreciate you coming in and your time this morning. Oliver Hartwich, he's the Executive Director of the New Zealand Initiative.